Good afternoon, listeners. My name is Rebecca Van Ness. I'm the host of today's Healthy Community, and we're glad you were able to join us today. Today's Healthy Community aims to improve health literacy through resources and information and offering education that strengthens and supports the wellness of individuals, families, and the communities in which we live. The show airs weekly on Fridays from 12 to 12:30. And today we have the great pleasure of introducing Stacey Oreske, who is a PhD RN. So I don't know, we should call you Dr. Oreske or Stacey. And today's topic is about comprehensive health care and health literacy. Let me give you a little bit of background information on Stacey. She spent past careers in cancer research, information technology, and ironically, wildland firefighting. She began her nursing career in the emergency room and quickly realized the impact that public health had on people and felt that it was the best way to improve America's health. So she wound up pursuing a PhD in nursing research at the University of Tennessee. Her dissertation focused on nurses' experience during crisis and disaster. Disasters when we need resources and the needs exceed the resources that we have available. It can be an acute situation like an earthquake, or it can be a chronic situation like poverty and access to health care. Today, she's working with providers across New Mexico to improve the health of patients through preventative care and focusing on wellness. She works with Humana Health Systems, and I wanted to have her share today her views on health literacy and comprehensive health care. Thank you for coming today, Stacey. Can you tell us a little bit about your view, your perspective on health literacy, and why it's so important, and comprehensive health care?
Well, thank you for having me. I'm very happy to be a part of this. The United States healthcare system is very complex, and the biology of a human being is complex. So there's a lot to understand, and when talking to a physician or any health care provider, you have to understand what they're talking about and understand how that applies to you and your condition. So health literacy is understanding about your own body, its health, its wellness, its illness, and then the impact the illnesses are having on you.
And how do you feel that supports comprehensive health care? When we look at the changing landscape of health care delivery, I think historically, in my mind, from my experiences and feedback from people I greatly respect who've had a lot more experience than I have in this field, they talk about staying well and about historically we've been in a situation where healthcare delivery was fairly reactive and you had a flu or you had a pain and you would go to the doctor because you didn't want to have those symptoms anymore. And I think going into the future, it feels like healthcare delivery needs to shift its focus. People still need hip replacements. People still need bypass surgeries. People still need to manage chronic diseases. But how do you think health literacy might support a patient in comprehensive health care and wellness with their health care team?
Right. So you're right. Health care in the United States is exorbitantly expensive, and the focus in the last few decades has been on wellness and not just illness. So patients just don't go see their doctor when they're sick. And so the idea of comprehensive health care is taking care of the entire patient, their physical, their emotional health problems, having a centralized primary care provider who's sort of like the quarterback of the whole healthcare team, orchestrating how the specialists getting the results from that. And health literacy is also about understanding the healthcare system and understanding that it's about taking care of your human machine. And one of the analogies I like to use when I'm talking with patients who just don't understand that, you know, they just think, well, I only go to the doctor when I'm sick, and I'm not sick. It's kind of like taking care of a car, right? You don't just buy it off the lot and then run it until it runs out of gasoline, runs out of oil, the radiator fluid evaporates, and then the engine melts down. You know, you take care of that machine, and you do the maintenance, and you give it a good fuel, you change the oil. That's wellness, and that's what physicians are starting to understand, that if we take care of our patients and encourage them to be healthy, it's better for the patients, it's better for the economy, it saves on healthcare expenses, and we have a healthier workforce. And so comprehensive healthcare, again, we have a very piecemeal system. We have different components. We have specialists, we have laboratories, we have rehab facilities, we have primary care physicians, but they don't necessarily talk to each other. And so the idea of comprehensive healthcare is kind of trying to oil the machine a little bit and get everybody talking to each other so that once the patients understand what each of those components do for them, you know, providing test results, providing specialty laboratory and procedures, but all that information making it back to the primary care physician, who is really the patient's entry into the healthcare system. And like I said, the primary care physician is kind of like the quarterback, and so they need to know what everybody's doing and what the results are, because they have the most, usually have the most influence with the patient and knows the complete story.
Yeah, and that's interesting that you would talk about the connectedness or lack thereof between the different team members on a person's healthcare team. And interestingly mm-hmm. enough, one of our future episodes will focus on health information technology and health information exchanges so that people can share information with their whole healthcare team. And most people don't carry their medical records around in their handbag. And it's helpful for everybody on the team to understand latest lab results and what kind of treatments they're under and regimens they're under so that they can best serve them.
Yeah, that's definitely a weakness in our healthcare system. So I'm glad to hear that you're having that episode. And that's very much trying to, again, to coordinate the care so that everybody knows everything about the patient. Primary care, you know, a patient goes there for an acute illness. Maybe they have a bad cold or sprain their ankle. A primary care physician still needs to know that that patient might be seeing a cardiologist as well, and needs to understand what medications the cardiologist might have prescribed, or what specific concerns the cardiologist has. And so, you know, but that cardiologist may be with a whole other healthcare system, and so the electronic medical record system of the one may not interface with the other one. And so it is very important to somehow get all the specialists and labs talking to each other, and that can only benefit a patient. Again, with health literacy, the patient needs to understand all this. They can't just go from one physician to another and just like they're having something done to them. They need to interact and engage and ask questions and tell their specifics to each of those physicians, and all the physicians need to speak to each other.
Yeah, I agree. I think in a dream world, I look forward to us having a national health information system and being able to readily go to a provider and know that they have uh-huh. everything they need to try and give people the best care possible. So yeah. This may sound like Greek to some of our listeners, but one of the things that's happening in our health system now as we start looking to better outcomes and reduced health care costs and better patient satisfaction, which essentially are considered the three pillars under which the Affordable Care Act and comprehensive health care ideas have been anchored to, we talk about what's called a shift from fee-for-service to population health and improved outcomes. And typically when you go to a doctor and you see a doctor, they submit a claim form, and that claim form has a lot of information on it, including a code number that doesn't mean much to any of us. But that code number is submitted to the insurance company or the payer, like Medicare, Medicaid, and they're paid a certain amount for that service and that code number. As we move forward, the amount of money that has been spent on healthcare, there's a lot of money that could be used more efficiently and effectively, and understanding that we're trying to reduce the cost of healthcare so there are ultimately more services available and extra resources can be put to perhaps preventative care and other health-related supports in our communities. We're looking at shifting from a fee-for-service a model, which is when you go to the doctor and they send the insurance company a bill, to a value-based reimbursement model or population health model that really encourages, actually requires for success for the doctors and the patients and everyone else on their healthcare team, their dietitian, their physical therapist, to come together and look at ways to improve their outcomes and keep them healthy. Can you talk a little bit, Stacia, about shifting from fee-for-service to maybe more of an outcomes-based approach with our payers and our patients?
Sure. And like you said, that fee-for-service is the traditional, the way we did it in the past, where a patient goes to the doctor, they're sick, the doctor orders some tests, and the insurance company pays for that. The shift is towards population health, and where the physician is tasked with keeping their panel of patients healthier. So again, using the car analogy, it's keeping that machine running at optimum and doing the preventive services. The idea is that, provider then is paid by the insurance company to keep that patient healthier. And so it actually becomes in the provider's best interest not to have to bill for expensive tests. And if they're healthier, then they don't need to do that.
Yeah. And I think that as we move forward, I think collaboration, partnership between all of the colleagues in the healthcare community along with the patient is going to result in better outcomes and higher patient satisfaction. We do need to take a quick break, and we'll come back and continue this conversation on health literacy and comprehensive health care with Dr. Stacia Ruskey, and we'll see you in a few. Thank you, listeners. Welcome back to today's Healthy Community. We have our guest today is Stacia Ruskey. She's a doctor of a PhD and an RN, doctor of nursing, I believe. And she's here today talking about health literacy and comprehensive health care. And I was hoping you could finish your thoughts on before we took our break on our last conversation.
Sure. So we were talking about how the shift from fee-for-service model for providers to them getting reimbursed based on outcomes. And what that really means is that the healthier their patients are, the more they get rewarded. And so I work with Humana, and we have Medicare Advantage program. And so with the population, this population, providers get rewarded when their patients get their preventive screenings, utilize the ER less because they're healthier and things like that. So it's about providers working with their patients, keeping them healthier, and then they get rewarded on that.
Yeah, when you talk about that, I might point out too to our listeners that not only does the provider get rewarded by having a healthier patient, the patient just feels better. And as we move forward, if we're able to reduce the cost of healthcare, logically, I think a reduced premiums are premiums that don't typically go up so consistently and so much may calm down a little bit. So I think it's in our community's best interest Economically, it's in everyone's best interest and the provider's best interest to look at better outcomes and reduce those costs for healthcare. When we were talking about comprehensive healthcare, you had mentioned to me in an earlier conversation and shared information on your interest and you're a proponent of patient-centered healthcare teams and a patient-centered approach. Can you talk to me about what that means and share with our listeners what a patient-centered approach might look like?
Well, patient-centered approach really changes the perspective of the doctor knows best to the patient knows best, and encouraging the patient to be involved in their own health care, talking about their own preferences, including their own values, cultural needs, and making sure that they understand that they're in charge of their health care and that they're working as part of the team. But it's no longer the idea that the doctor knows best, but that the patient knows best.
And I think as long as they're working and communicating clearly with their healthcare team, getting that information in a way that they can understand, of course, being competent and considerate to the cultural and familial needs of a patient is going to be really important. When we talk about continuum of care approaches to help people get and stay well, just like with the patient-centered approach, how the patient becomes one of the cheerleaders, if you will, or speakers for their team, actively speaking out and deciding with their team what works best for them. We talk about continuum of care. So I'm thinking that that would be a situation where someone needs a procedure or a treatment or they need extra support, and there are folks out there that helps to make sure that they stay on track and gives them the information and the additional supports they need to make good choices. Can you talk to me about continuum of care approaches?
Sure. So a patient that's healthy doesn't interact much with the healthcare system, but they might go to the PCP for an annual wellness visit. But when they get sick or have concerns that they might need to go out and see other specialists, they might be prescribed medications, and they might want to talk with a pharmacist. In the more complex systems, and the United States population has become rather unhealthy, and many of the citizens and older people have numerous chronic conditions, and it gets more complex to understand. It's the use of care managers, caseworkers, to make sure that communication occurs between the various health entities and partners, making sure that the patient is getting the needs, not just the medical care, but the social care, to function in the community, perhaps to keep them in the home setting instead of back into the medical care setting, which is always more expensive. So, and it's just utilizing all the different resources, dietitians, physical therapists, aging specialists, et cetera. So using all of those and just making sure whichever modality is best suited for the patient and their situation, and then making sure that communication occurs between those.
And having talked to you a few times, Stacia, I know that you do recognize and appreciate how important all of these frontliners are as far as the healthcare system, those ancillary and advanced level practitioners who may not be a primary care provider or a medical specialist. When we talk about caseworkers, the social supports are so important, and I'm so glad you brought that up in regards to chronic disease, chronic pain, those kinds of things. There are a host and a variety of issues under which a patient might really benefit from social supports, be it talk therapy, be it home visits, caseworkers to help them understand where they're at, even getting to and from your primary care provider if you live in a rural or frontier community without a lot of public transportation. We've got a lot of challenging roads to get in and out of. It could turn out that where I believe it is a situation where those kinds of advanced level practitioners and support staff can be very important in regards to the outcome for a patient. Tell me, talk to me about preventative services. When we're looking at staying well, you use the analogy of taking your car and perhaps to have it serviced, have the oil changed, have a tune-up. Talk to me about preventative services for people and how that supports healthcare.
Sure. So preventative services is screenings, keeping an eye on the patients to get an early indication of any forthcoming illnesses. A lot of the insurance companies, so I work for Humana, and we provide preventive screenings at no cost to patients, and most of the Medicare Advantage programs do that as well. It's cheaper to keep a patient healthy than to treat them when they're at the end stages of diseases. So mammograms, colorectal cancer screenings, keeping an eye on your blood sugars, your A1Cs, your blood pressures, cholesterol. Those are all preventive services. Those are screenings. And it's a point in time on how the patient is doing. And it gives an early indication of if there's a condition that needs to have more attention paid to by the physician. Or maybe the patient needs to make some lifestyle modifications in order to stay healthy and to not slow down the progression of a disease if it's an inevitable disease.
For instance, diet could be a major key player in improving someone's health?
Well, sure. If there's an indication that the blood sugars are going up, then diet, of course, can have an impact on reducing blood sugars. Exercises, getting out and walking the dog, playing with the grandchildren, things like that. Mm-hmm. Those are all ways to prevent such diseases such as diabetes type 2. And then also I wanted to mention, because you brought up, physical activity is a very important part of a person's life, and it's not just the physical activity, but it impacts the mental aspect as well, mm-hmm. and that also is a big player in people's health. So you had brought that up earlier, and I just wanted to reiterate that.
Yeah, I think feeling mentally healthy, I think our mind can follow our body and vice versa, so it's good to keep track of where we're at with both of those. I know the insurance companies and Medicare encourages proactive approaches from their members to try and maintain their health. Can you talk to me about some of the additional benefits that Medicare members might have available to them? For instance, if they do have to go to the hospital for a procedure, there's a whole host of benefits that Medicare members and seniors can take advantage of that perhaps they might not know about.
Right. So one of the advantages of Medicare Advantage programs is that while they are required to provide the basic Medicare benefits that the government provides, but because that they're trying to save money, that healthier patients save them money, they're required to invest that money back into programs for the patient. So the healthier the patient gets, the healthier, the more money is available to provide them more services. So many of the Medicare Advantage plans have additional benefits, things like if the patient is in the hospital and just gets discharged, that they're going to have a support staff. So not only just the physicians and the healthcare system might have a case manager, but the insurance companies will have care managers as well, and they might make phone calls to the patient after a discharge. I know that Humana We will send out meals for a patient who's just recently been discharged, so they don't have to worry about who's going to cook for them maybe after they just had a knee replacement. We have programs where our pharmacists will call the patient because maybe they've just been given a diagnosis of a complex disease, a chronic heart failure, and they're not going to understand all the medications or maybe even all the details of this serious disease. Sometimes they're just in shock and they can't take that in. But our pharmacists will call them and explain why they need to take the medications, why the side effects are better than what the ramifications of that disease are if they don't take that medication. Or they might explain about the polypharmacy and the interactions of those medications. Medicare Advantage programs, they might also provide free gym services so that as a Medicare-age person, they can take advantages of local gyms, but also not just local gyms, but if they're traveling to see the family, the grandkids, or, you know, they're retired and they're seeing the world, they can go to gyms throughout the United States for free. Not only do they get the physical activity, but they get the social interaction, which we know is very important for the mental health aspect. For populations that either live very rurally or they don't drive or they don't want to work out at a gym, they'll send physical activity boxes to them. So they might get stretch bands or a yoga DVD so they can continue to do physical activity at home and get the benefits of that. So, and then also the incentives, a lot of the Medicare Advantage programs now, they have incentives. So when you get your preventive exams and tests, screenings, they get points. If you're walking your dog every morning, you get points. And those can be redeemed for gift cards, at the local Walmart or something like that. So there's all kinds of different ways to encourage people to get their screenings and to make lifestyle changes and take charge of their own health and get rewarded. So not just with better health, but with tangible rewards as well.
That's great. Well, we could continue this conversation, of course, for quite some time. There's a lot to talk about. But I do want to thank you, Dr. Stacey Oreske, Dr. PhD and RN, who's been with us today. She's from Humana. And I want to thank you for your time, Stacia. And let's see, we wanted to thank our listeners, of course, for joining us this afternoon. Today's Healthy Community is underwritten by Today's Healthy Community and its partners. You can visit us on the Facebook page at Today's Healthy Community. We'll give you further information when the website is up and running. And until next time, everybody, stay healthy. Thanks for joining us.